Sifter for the ear.
News, interviews, reviews, cinema, TV, streaming.
Action. Hi, y'all. This is Jerry Williams, a.k.a. TV Jerry. I lied to you. Well, actually, I changed my mind. This week was supposed to be Donna Bailey talking about teleprompting, but the screening that I mentioned last week in the opening for Cinema Niche is coming this week, so I pivoted over to them.
We bought 8 cans of digital projection paint. It's over $100 a can. It makes the projector just pop.
That was Jeff Roll talking about painting the screen for Cinema Niche, a screening space in Studio 23's new building. We'll be talking with the founders about the upcoming show on March 8th, but the day before, the studio will be hosting the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which brings films about solutions and possibilities to restore the earth and human communities. I'll include a link to those shows on the webpage for this show at tvjerry.com. So in a minute, we'll check in with Jeff Roll and PJ Sykes, who are two-thirds of the team behind Cinema Niche.
Sifter Review of the Week.
A little different this week. I usually review films here that are streaming, but I'm going to go for one that's actually playing right now at Movieland. Perfect Days. Tokyo commissioned designers to create 17 cool and interesting public toilets around the city. Koji Yakuso plays a man who diligently cleans them. The film spends the majority of the time with this activity, but also outlines the other procedures in his structured routine: grooming, reading, eating, and listening to cassettes of American music. He also revels in the beauty of trees and takes photos of them. As created by director Wim Wenders, the acts of mindfully appreciating details become a sort of meditation. The title refers to the Lou Reed song, which is about simple daily pleasures. While there are some small story developments, the film is primarily a poetic rumination about appreciating life. Yakuso won Best Actor at Cannes, which is a challenge because he conveys little emotion during most of the film. But the powerful final close-up sums up his life and helps explain the Cannes recognition. By the way, stay through the credits for a final image in the context supplied by a definition of komorebi. I gave Perfect Days 3.5 out of 5 stars. First of all, gentlemen, I've got 2 out of 3 of you on here. Why don't you each introduce yourselves and tell us what your background is, how you got into being a cinema buff or a cinema creator?
Okay, my name is Jeff Roll. I started my, film curation career with the James River Film Society way back in 2003. I started curating through that organization in 2007, started doing shows within the film festival. And then in 2009, I founded my own talk show for filmmakers called the James River Filmmakers Forum. And that was based over at the Visual Arts Center. Right. And it lasted from 2009 to 2018.
And what got you into movies in the first place?
I've always been kind of a cinemaphile. Probably my college years is when I took a lot of film history courses.
Sure.
It got me interested into the point of doing deep dives, and I started attending film festivals at that time.
Uh-huh. You know, actually, interestingly, my first film class was from Carol Cass. I don't know if y'all know that name, but she was the diva of Richmond theater criticism for about 30, 40 years from the time Dispatch, and she was my teacher and my mentor, actually. So, PJ, how about you? How did you get into this business?
Yeah, my name's PJ Sykes. Most people know me as a music photographer around town. Yeah, I take a picture of bands, you know, either portraits or live. Most people know me from that. But really what started... I just didn't have access to video cameras and stuff growing up that much. And, you know, somebody would borrow one from work, or like, you know, somebody's dad had one, and we were making little films in high school and things. So I was trying to, you know, make, you know, little documentaries or film bands and stuff so I could share those things. But then again, we didn't really have YouTube and things quite like that yet. So again, I kind of moved back into photography. But more recently, I was the videographer for the Richmond Ballet for a while. And I do a little promotional videos for bands and music videos and stuff like that.
And the third member who's not here, Shane Brown, what's the story on Shane?
Shane, he's the general operator at the Bird Cinema, and he was one of the founding members of the Bijou Film Center back a few years ago in downtown Richmond.
Footnote.
The Bijou Film Center was an independent art house cinema in downtown Richmond. It ran for about a year in 2016.
He's a technical expert that I always go to when it comes to projection, audio, that type of a thing. So we're really glad to have him as a partner.
What made you decide, hey, let's put Cinema Niche together?
It all started in 2019. We screened the Swans documentary. That's a experimental rock band. I found out about it and approached the director, Marco Passorio, and he sent me a copy of it. And I was blown away by its quality and kind of reached out on social media to see if there was an audience out there for it. And I believe this is when this caught PJ's eye.
He's nodding, so that means yes.
Yeah. And he said, hey, I'd love to do this. How can I help out? And that's when it all started. At that time, we didn't have a venue, so we rented out the Black Iris Gallery on Broad Street. And that's when I reached out to Shane, and he had a lot of equipment left over from the Bijou Film Center. I think we had the capacity around 100 people per screening, and we did two screenings, and it was very well attended, and we didn't lose money on it. So we considered it a success, and we were looking forward to doing something like that again. And then, of course, along comes that nasty little pandemic that we were all dealing with in 2020 that shut us down for over 2 years.
Surprise guest drop in.
By the way, somebody wanted to drop in and say hello. Somebody you might recognize. Hold on here. See this. Hi, Ashley. How are you?
I'm well. How are y'all?
Hi, Ashley. It's good to see you and your little dinosaur drawing.
Footnote.
Ashley Hawkins is the executive director of Studio 23, and they just moved into the building in Manchester that used to house Dogtown Dance Theater.
Yeah, I look like a dinosaur. I have the flu, so the dinosaur looks better than me. So we're going to go with that.
hoping for you have a brisk recovery there.
Yeah.
I'm on the way. I'm definitely better.
Yeah, and thank heavens we have Zoom, so we don't have to worry about getting contagious. So that's good.
Exactly.
So what's your relationship with Cinema Niche?
Well, Mr. Jeff Roll approached us. Gosh, Jeff, it's been what? More than a year now.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Yeah. So when we were first looking to purchase the Dogtown building before we'd even gotten down to closing on the building, and he had shared Cinema Niche with us and the idea for the film screening series and thought that the building would be a great fit for it. And of course, we agreed and are super excited. So Jeff was generous enough to help us get the projector and the speakers for the space. So it's really been transformative in taking that, you know, big open room to being a black box theater. So we're really excited.
Great. And how's life in general over there after the big move, Ashley?
It's wonderful. It's been really, really fantastic. We're finally settling in. You know, we moved mid-November officially. So it took a few months to get our feet under us. But now we've been having regular programming and back to running classes full time. And all of our print shops are running. And we're having tons of open community events in the event space. So it's been really fantastic to be in the community and to be operating, you know, back at full capacity.
Right, right. And of course, the next event for Cinema Niche is coming up very soon.
Yeah, their first screening at Studio 23 is coming up on the 8th, which is Friday, just 2 days from now. The doors are, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but at 7:30 and the screening starts at 8.
That is correct.
Cool. So and you're going to be there to welcome everybody.
I am. I'm so excited. We're really, you know, this is kind of the first official big screening we have with all the equipment installed. So I'm thrilled to welcome everybody and to get it kicked off.
We're very appreciative for you letting us get involved with Studio 23 at such a level.
Well, we're pumped. So I'll see you in a few days.
Okie dokie. Thank you, Ashley.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Ashley.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye. So, PJ, where did the name come from, that fancy French name?
It was just, you know, conversations with Jeff over and, you know, what we're going to call this thing. We kind of wanted to leave it a little open so we're not pigeonholed into doing, you know, just music documentaries in the future. If something were to change or we got into something else, you know, just something that was easy to remember and kind of identifying, you know, a little bit what we do. And, you know, Cinema Niche. So it's like, you know, it's not for everybody, maybe. We're welcoming everybody, of course, but these are going to be lesser known or lesser, you know, things that maybe, you know, even people who are into this kind of music maybe didn't know about the documentary.
Speaking of movies about music, obviously Ashley mentioned it. What is the one coming up on the 8th?
This film is called Sisters with Transistors, and it's a documentary about the pioneering women in electronic music. Most of it's, you know, the late 50s and 60s into the 70s and so on, right when electronic music was pretty experimental and people were starting to use it for soundtracks and commercials and stuff, very, very early stuff. Each one of these women have an incredible story about how they got into it. and what kind of equipment they were using, from tape machines to like the Moog machine that everybody's familiar with, and theremins, other things like tape loops that I don't know if I mentioned that.
Was Wendy Carlos included? Because Wendy was Walter back then.
Footnote.
Before her transition, Wendy Carlos was known as Walter Carlos, and he was most famous for Switched on Bach and the soundtrack for A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I was worried that she wasn't, you know, talked about much. And she does come up later in the film. And I was thinking about this other day, why she maybe wasn't included as much. And there's two reasons. I know that she's kind of guarded and doesn't do a lot of publicity. Even her, most of her work is out of print. And the other reason is that she's the most popular. It's kind of almost a household name, right? Whereas most of these other women never got recognized during their time. So I think that maybe there's that reason too. And you'll learn a little bit about that in the film.
Right. So is this a nonprofit? Are y'all trying to make money off of this?
Well, our goal is always to break even. We're not set up as a nonprofit for the time being. We'll take a look at that. If this screening is successful and the next project that we do is successful, then we'll formalize as a nonprofit. But for right now, we're just a kind of a kitchen table organization. We're just trying to fill a hole that these films usually pass over Richmond, and we want to pull it in and show it to our audiences. I think there is an audience here in Richmond. There's a lot of big music fans, a lot of big music nerds, really.
It's a passion project for sure.
I have been in the giant space upstairs with the sprung floor and the big windows, which used to be the gym. Is that where you're doing this, or is there a smaller studio downstairs, or where is it?
You've got the right place. That's the old dance performance place back when it was Dogtown.
That's a great space. It's big, and you can show stuff during the day because you got the black curtains you can pull all the way around it, too. So it gets very dark.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'm bummed about is they had a set of seating bleachers there during Dogtown, and
right.
they tore all that out.
Oh, no. So it'll be flat seating.
I think the Studio 2-3 owns like 200 chairs, so we'll just break those out and stagger them nicely so everybody can get a great view of the film.
I would imagine this space is going to evolve over time as people use it and we figure out how it's best used.
So are you going to have popcorn and things to drink?
Correct. There's free popcorn and there's going to be a cash bar there. And any proceeds that we make, we are going to donate over to the Richmond Reproductive Freedom Project. That's, you know, a kind of a topic that's in the news a lot since the overturn of Roe v. Wade last year. And to be benefiting that charity, it just seems right.
That's wonderful. So I know that you were, and I know, PJ, you were aware of the whole, the bijou. So what makes you think y'all going to make cinema niche work when all the expertise of Mr. Terry Ray and all the other people couldn't kind of get the bijou to go?
I think what makes this a little different is that they had their own space they were trying to keep alive. And Studio 2-3 is its own thing. And we're just going to be showing programming there from time to time. So no one's, you know, relying on our program to keep the lights on necessarily.
So what's next after Sisters and Transistors?
That's going to be April 11th. This is going to be a part of the 30th anniversary of the James River Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
And it's my program that I did with them through the 9 years, the James River Filmmakers Forum. We're doing a redo. We're showcasing five local filmmakers. We'll be screening their projects and interviewing them afterwards. And we're going to have a special music guest, Eli Owens.
So what about personally for you guys? What's in your career? I know there's some interesting things in your background. I know you are the chief creative officer of the office at the Office of Creativity.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you're doing to make a living?
I have a full-time job where I'm a marketing director, essentially doing content for an integrator in town. But I just do too many things, maybe. I've been running my own little record label almost 25 years,
right?
Called Cherub Records, mostly my music and, you know, close friends and things like that. A group that came out of Lynchburg. And then the Office of Creativity is my little LLC where I do creative work for people. You know, I can edit or film or photograph or help you with website or marketing, that kind of stuff. So it's my little side hustle LLC.
Great. Okay. And Jeff, how do you make a living?
Well, I'm a fluid connector specialist in hydraulics and pneumatics. I work for a local company. I'm a branch manager. I've been with that company for 16 plus years now.
Wow.
I'm able to escape and do things for Cinema Niche and Studio 2-3 when I have some downtime.
Great. That's good. Well, and you're making a living, which is the good part too. So I read in your releases you're going to have a new logo coming out. Is that because one of you's got friends with graphic designers?
Yeah, we got Matt Klimas from the Snowy Owls and Low Branches to help us with that. I'm excited to launch that on March 8th.
Footnote.
As I mentioned at the beginning, after our recording, PJ gave me early access to the new logo. So it's on the webpage for the show at TV Jerry if you want to get a glimpse at it before the 8th. For those who haven't been there, it is a big, comfortable space. The screen is enormous, so you will be able to have a big, it's not a little tiny, you know, set up on a tripod type screen. So people will have a great visual experience, I'm sure. And I'm assuming y'all have got pumped up audio in there too for that.
Oh, yeah. We have a brand new audio system. I stored it here in my house, and it took over about half of my living room.
So. and what kind of projector? I'm assuming it's just a basic laser projector. I don't even know what people use anymore.
Well, it's basically a large venue projector. Back when Dogtown was there, they did dance performances under just a common conference room projector, which is not as bright. And it's meant to, you know, show pie charts to a dozen people around an office table or something like that.
Right.
And they were using that. So that's the first thing that I wanted to do was get that out of there and get something really, really nice. I found an Epson factory refurb, a large venue projector. The thing cost probably around 10 grand, but I found a really nice factory refurb for a nice little discount. And then, of course, Shane was involved in installing that. And also the projection wall was just a bare wall. So what we did is we bought, I think, maybe 8 cans of digital projection paint. The paint is very costly. It's over $100 a can.
Wow.
And it makes the, I think it's 8,500 lumens of the projector just pop. And you're going to see that.
Of course, I've seen movie theater screens up close, and they do have that little bit of a shininess reflectance to them. I'm assuming maybe that paint has some kind of particles in it that creates that same effect, brightens it up.
Yeah, there's a special element to the paint to pick up and refract the lumens of the projector.
Right. Are y'all using DVDs or DCPs? How are you actually getting the movies into the projector these days?
Yeah. And what's nice is, you know, we have the capabilities of showing pretty much anything, because I know Shane can show, he sometimes shows like actual films. And that's what's so great about the partnership here is that, you know, we have a really technical person who knows kind of do all this stuff.
Right, right.
And then we have a guy with Jeff who knows the industry more, you know, and knows how to communicate with, you know, distribution and getting films. And then I'm sort of the hype guy or whatever, you know, like, and together we can make all this stuff happen pretty well.
PJ is the head promoter.
One question I always like to ask everybody at the end of the interview is, when you're not working on movies to show at Cinema Niche, what do you like to watch at home? PJ, you're nodding your head. You look like you're ready for it.
We just finished the last season of Fargo, which was really great.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And my wife and I just started watching this TV show you may have heard of called Sopranos, because we never really watched it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Okay. Turns out
well, you're in
good.
For some treats, aren't you?
Yeah. So, you know, we're going back and watching something we hadn't really spend any time with in the previous, but for me, I like to watch, I've been catching up on all the Godzilla movies in between the new stuff and the previous really old stuff.
Did Godzilla you see the stuff. New one that was out a couple months
the
ago?
The new one's amazing. I went back and saw it in black and white.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I've seen it in both black and white and color. So for me, the Godzilla in black and white was a little bit better. But honestly, the movie is just, even if you don't like Godzilla, it's just a really powerful movie.
Maybe it's age difference. I just was just so disappointed. And I put my review up. I guess I was expecting the typical Godzilla. And it's, of course, this kinder, gentler Godzilla.
I hesitate to say that it's a reboot, but it kind of is of the original idea. It deals with the characters more than it does with Godzilla and,
right.
You know, the stress of being in a situation like what happens after things are blown up, you know, responsibility. It's just kind of it's heavier than you think. And it's not because Godzilla is really big.
Jeff, how about you?
I just wrapped the latest season of True Detective with Jodie Foster.
What'd you think? I thought that one just didn't quite, I kept wanting it to be great, but it never really grabbed me.
It was a weird one. It was definitely different than the previous seasons. It was kind of had this horror armature going through it with a lot of supernatural stuff going on. But I think what fascinated me, it took place in Alaska, but it was actually shot in Iceland. And I went to Iceland 2 years ago, and so many films are being shot in Iceland now, especially on the fantasy science fiction realm. I guess it's their terrain.
It doesn't really look
like planet Earth up there. So it's gotten to be a really popular shooting area. And pretty much I have a routine that every week I try to watch one or two movies that were made before I was born.
Oh, great.
And I encourage everyone to do that, because there's so much cinema out there that was made before you were born. And some of the kids coming up, it's, oh, that's too old, I don't want to watch that. You don't know what you're missing.
Absolutely. Right. Although, sometimes the pacing can be a little more of a challenge because people took more time to breathe back in those days. All right, well, guys, it's been great to talk to you about these movies and about the movie that you've got coming up, Sisters with Transistors, a great name. Good luck with the Cinema Niche. I'll have the links on the website, of course, and I'll have a link to your music page also on there, PJ, so people can check everything out, and we'll look forward to hearing about what's coming next, and I'll be sure to mention it on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
That was Jeff Roll and PJ Sykes, who are two-thirds of the team behind Cinema Niche. They'll be presenting movies in Studio 23's newly occupied building in Manchester. The next screening is March 8th with the documentary Sisters with Transistors, celebrating International Women's Day with a look at the women who were involved in the early days of electronic music.
Coming soon. In theaters.
Kung Fu Panda 4. Jack Black and Awkwafina are back for this sequel, which also includes the voices of Viola Davis, Dustin Hoffman, and Bryan Cranston. Imaginary. Chauncey the Bear is the latest childhood toy to terrorize children, and in this case, the adult who returns to her childhood home. Cabrini is the title character, an Italian immigrant in 1889 New York City, who tries to persuade the hostile mayor to provide housing and health care for hundreds of orphan children. Directed by the man who helmed last year's surprise hit, Sound of Freedom.
TV and streaming.
This is a light week for new streamers, but there's a ton coming next week. Oscars on ABC. Sunday night is the big one at 7 p.m. Apples Never Fall on Peacock. When the matriarch of a family goes missing, Annette Bening, her four adult children piece together what they thought they knew about their parents, with Daddy played by Sam Neill. Damsel on Netflix. I had it wrong last week. It actually opens on the 8th. Features Millie Bobby Brown as a woman who's betrothed to marry a king, but finds herself confronted with a fire-breathing dragon. Blown Away, also on Netflix, the fourth season of this reality competition features glassblowers. Next week, I promise we will have that chat with Donna Bailey about the ups and downs of teleprompting, including the one person she'd refuse to work for. This is Jerry Williams. Thanks for listening.
For more Sister, including literally thousands of reviews,
visit TVJerry.com.
That's a wrap.